Welcome to Nature Now, an original production by KPTZ volunteers. Nature Now is a program of information and insights about the natural history of our region. We welcome observations and suggestions from our listeners, care of naturenow@kptz.org.
Hello, this is Deborah Ann Kelso, host of this edition of Nature Now. This week, we are very pleased to have for you part two of a show that we recorded with Fred Sharp last month. In part two, he will discuss the prairies of the Olympic Peninsula and some of the oak savanna habitats in our area also. So we focused part one of our show last month on reviewing the various research projects that were showcased at the Cascade Prairie Oak Partnership Conference down in Vancouver, Washington, back in November 2022. This month, we'd like to focus on conservation efforts closer to home on the Olympic Peninsula and surrounds, and provide some ideas on how folks can create a bit of prairie habitat in their own backyards. Welcome back, Fred.
Hey, everybody. Good to be here.
We are very happy to have you. So when you and Anita McMillan from the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife went down to the conference a couple of months ago, you presented a paper and poster on Olympic Peninsula prairies, right?
That's correct.
Do you want to give us a bit of a summary on what you presented there?
Well, we just wanted to kind of celebrate the amazing diversity of non-forested prairie-type ecosystems that we have here on the Olympic Peninsula. And it's amazing how diverse what we have is. Like, we have very dry, gravelly prairies. The Kaitai Prairie is a great example. We have open areas that have prairie plants like dune ecosystems, rocky outcrops, sand dunes, even along river valleys, all the way up through to into the subalpine. We celebrate these dry areas, but we also have a lot of what are technically considered prairie ecosystems and very wet sites. And if you're out on the west side of the peninsula up by the Ho River and Ho Valley, there's some amazing open prairies of camas. The Quileute Prairie and Forks Prairies were some of our largest prairie ecosystems here on the peninsula, and those of course were very wet-based systems. But yet it was through the burning, again, of indigenous peoples is extremely important for maintaining these open sites. But also, sometimes you get so much moisture, so much rainfall out there that they actually start to operate like tropical soils, in that the soils can become intensely leached because of so much rainfall. And this is something that has been studied by Dave Peters and Stan Graham of the Pacific Northwest Forest Service Field Station down in Olympia. They've been noted that, yeah, it's kind of wild that you look at the early settlers who were out there and tried to plant these areas, initially had good crops of oats and hops and various grains, but then they quickly realize that there's something really odd about these soils and just that they're so intentionally leached. But they do contain historically, and even today, some of the grazing practices out there, you can find some really good stands of camas where you have these low to intermediate densities of cattle on them. So again, it gets back to the diverse partnership to restore and maintain these ecosystems.
We have a beautiful example of prairies in our area, of what this whole area used to look like, right across from the station, right at the edge of the Port Townsend Golf Course, right?
Yeah, the Native Plant Society has done such an amazing job of stewarding this over the past several decades, and the golf course has been a really good partner in helping us even expand it a little bit, and just lots of exciting ideas about how we can move forward in the future. And, you know, a site like this is just so important because it's, you know, it's regionally and even globally significant piece of prairie that makes us realize that prairie used to be everywhere. You know, we used to have thousands of acres of it throughout the Quimper Peninsula, and maybe 15,000 acres over in Squim, and even perhaps larger parcels over on Whidbey Island that had been so incredibly diminished. And so just having these little outdoor laboratories and genetic reservoirs, you know, of course, the most important part of intelligent tinkering is saving all the parts. So through understanding what was here and thinking about restoration strategies and having locally adapted seeds and insects and plants there is super important. So it's get out there and enjoy that patch of prairie any time of the year, especially in April, May, and June.
And that's because it can be a sea of camas, right? I mean, it's this beautiful beautiful wave of blue, purple, with a few of the bright lomatium, desert parsley heads.
Yes, it's like they have those gorgeous purple and gold colors. And when Lewis Clark, when they came across the came into the country, they would see these huge, like out in Nez Perce country, they would see these huge fields of camas, you know, stretching out for miles in these valley bottoms. They thought they were lakes. I thought they were beautiful, clear blue lakes. And it turns out it was these fields of camas. And so they even took some, feasted on the camas with the local tribes. And we first knew the camas in Europe as the American lily, and it was grown and appreciated for its beauty. And so now we're in a wonderful area of renaissance with the camas, realizing that it's incredible cultural importance. It's a keystone species for local tribes. And so a lot of our work now is done in consultation with the tribes and using their leadership and stories to inspire us to bring back these amazing ecosystems.
So what do you consider to be the highest quality prairie habitats that we still have on the Olympic Peninsula and surrounding area?
Well, over on Whidbey Island, of course, there's the Pacific Rim Institute. They have a really cool story, almost similar to what we have here on the Kwatai Prairie, where several decades ago, it was this little patch of camas and spring gold and, you know, the lomatiums and farewell to spring, all these fabulous wildflowers. It's like, check this out. And it was some visionary individuals over there that realized that this is incredibly significant. And the Pacific Rim Institute has expanded now to dozens of acres, and they converted the old Department of Wildlife pheasant farms. Their buildings and structures now have been converted to office spaces and labs and retail spaces and places you go over there. It's fantastic. People can sell wild honey and paintings and wildlife and bird boxes and bird seed, and it's really cool and a great model for what we'd like to do over here on the Olympic Peninsula. So Whidbey Island prairies are good. Of course, our local prairie, the Kwatai Prairie, is fabulous. You know, fortunately, probably the most biggest prairie areas over in Squim, those have really pretty much vanished. There's been a few sites that have been rediscovered of lingering prairie species. And overall, there's quite a few prairie plants, but they're all just kind of tucked in along roadsides or beach and dune areas are important. They inter-hybridize, inter-digitate with prairie ecosystems. So those can be very important too. And once you get into the bogs, it's crazy. Camas has a really broad ecological amplitude. It'll grow from the driest gravelly prairies into wetlands. And so some of these bogs that were either maintained by high water levels or even fired by indigenous tribes, but probably the best examples of these prairie ecosystems are found in the San Juan Islands and southern Vancouver Island. There's huge awareness of these ecosystems over in British Columbia, Beacon Hill Park, throughout the San Juan Islands, where I did quite a bit of work back in the day. Because we have these, like, you know, dozens, if not hundreds of small islands that each have their own story of mostly not having people on them, if that's a great thing for these restoration sites. So yeah, there's lots of small sites around which we can rebuild these impressive ecosystems.
Well, there has been some great prairie inventory work going on with the U.S. Forest Service, initiated by ecologists Dave Peters and Stan Graham, a group of biologists and citizen scientists who call themselves the Prairie Prowlers. You've been out with them a couple of times, right?
They're just amazing mentors and visionaries, and they have done a ton of work of just going out and mapping the distribution of prairies throughout the Olympic Peninsula. And there's really cool, the bear grass savannas around Shelton and Lake Cushman, that was formerly thought to be over 10,000 acres of specially maintained prairies, and of course with the food plants, but also with the basketry materials. The bear grass, it's really cool. Bear grass you typically see up at high elevation, but here locally it occurs right down to sea level. And the Skokomis peoples were known up and down the sound for their beautiful, small, fancy baskets that they would make, decorative baskets.
Made out of bear grass,
uh-huh. Yeah. And so the fire is important, because when a fire comes through, this resprouting of the plants, it gives you very quickly, rapid, long plant fibers in these growing and emerging shoots without the breakup of the fibers at each of the nodes where the leaf branches off. And so They've doing great work down there. And if you get a chance, go check it out. Go and check in with the Forest Service Ranger Station down there and find out where you can view some of these amazing bunchgrass savannas.
Oh, cool. And what about oak savannas? There's some major conservation efforts going on in Squim, spearheaded by Bill Wood and Bob Steelquist, right?
Yep. And I work with Nita McMillan at the Department of Wildlife and Kerry Blake Park. They've done some amazing restoration activities. And, you know, it's kind of cool. The gary oak is a signature species, and it's fared, you know, reasonably well during the colonial period.
And we should review for people that it's also known as the Oregon white oak.
That's right. That's right.
But the gary oak is the only one that we get this far north. It goes by gary oak.
It goes by gary oak. And, we've got, you know,
Porcus garyana.
Porcus garyana, that's right. And we've got some beautiful patches of it locally here. One of them is right in the isthmus between Maristone and Indian Island. There's a beautiful patch of it. There's a couple other patches which are on the Maristone military area, which is off limits, but they're aware of them and getting stewardship out there. But the signature stand and go visit is the one that right down at the where they put the new bridge in and the new.
That's an amazing restoration effort. We did a show on tracking there a year and a half ago, and I was so impressed with what a beautiful job they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the oaks are great because if you go over to Squim, there's lots of oaks there growing up in the upper canopy and throughout the neighborhoods, and it's a great place to collect acorns. Go there and you can just see there's places where they hang over parking lot. The acorns just kind of roll down and collect, and you can scoop them up by the handful, and they're great to prepare for eating. There's lots go online. There's lots of wonderful recipes for how to treat the oaks and leach out the tannins and then make them into meals and flapjacks and pancakes and breads, and they're just super fun to grow too. I mean, sometimes you'll just go to like the Pioneer Memorial Park and there'll be hundreds of these germinating acorns that try to get in there before the squirrels do, and bring them home and plant them, and with a little bit of tending you can have in a few years you can have these magnificent slender saplings growing up, and
which can turn into magnificent trees.
That's right Some of them, yeah. I found one that had come down in a windstorm, and it was over 500 years old in Squim.
Wow.
So, they're our signature, very important wildlife tree with the cavities for nesting birds and small mammals, and tons of organisms eat the acorns. So go celebrate oaks.
That's right. And Whidbey Island has Oak Harbor Gary Oak Society has been really active, and their website is ohgaryoaksociety.org. So they are doing cool work. So what plant and animal species are associated with prairie and oak savanna that are most threatened in our area?
Probably it's the ground nesting birds that have probably had one of the most challenging times. The streak-torn lark, western bluebird, chipping sparrow, vesper sparrow has been problematic. We used to have these amazing Lewis's woodpeckers, western bluebirds, burrowing owls, and so it's the prairie ecosystems, which even only make up a few percentage points of the overall ecosystem west of the Cascades, they have suffered the most at the humans and have lost the most species losses. Other concerns are for pocket gophers, Mazama pocket gophers, more in the South Sound area, gray squirrels.
The native
gray squirrel. That's right, western gray
which
squirrel.
Is now just at Joint Base Lewis-McChord, right?
Yeah, there, and in the Columbia River Gorge.
Uh-huh, yep. Yeah, not the eastern gray squirrel that is now invading lots of areas in our parks.
Yeah.
And even out at home, out near Cape George Way. But we won't go there. Some positive things have been done about the decline of these species, though. There's been reintroducing western bluebirds back to the San Juans.
Yeah, there's been some successful reintroductions of the bluebirds in the San Juans, and one of the strategies is to actually collect the eggs from birds in areas where they're well-established and then tuck them into robin's nests.
Oh.
And so you can get these foster parenting strategies. Just creating bluebird trails, bluebird habitats, putting up the boxes can attract them. And the western bluebirds, you can find them breeding locally and sporadically around in our clear cuts. So when there's a fresh cut, you can see them come in, and they're somewhat opportunists, the bluebirds, and you'll find them in old snags and cavities, and it's always a delight to see them. Of course, they the most common area is for their groups up in the subalpine of the Olympics in the dry areas. You can find western bluebirds nesting up there with their open country companions, the butterbutt or the Audubon's warblers.
Yeah, I'm crazy about bluebirds, both western and mountain. So it's
could
always
it be because you've got bluebird colored eyes? Aww, is that right?
Oh. So what about areas that have potential to be restored back to prairie or oak savanna? I know that there have been a lot of exciting ideas and trials floating about our area the last couple of years through the schools, the tribes, land trusts,
we are,
private landowners like Finn River.
We're just in a renaissance, really, of prairie rehabilitation, in that people have just really come to appreciate that, well, we're kind of in an area of supply-side disruptions, increasing, inflating food prices, and the health benefits of growing your own food. And why not look at some of the delicious and enduring prairie foods that have been grown here for, we're talking thousands of years. I mean, they're finding these camas ovens that go back 7,000 years in the Willamette Valley. And so this is...
Well, there's some right over on Whidbey Island, too.
Amazing, amazing. And they found roasted camas bulbs and archaeological sites over in Squim. And so it only seems fitting that we use some of these healthful and locally adapted foods. They support native pollinator communities. They're bioregional. They have all these health benefits. And so, so the opportunity there is fantastic. And you don't necessarily need to have former prairie soils. These plants have been tended by humans co-evolved with them for thousands of years. They respond extremely well to just collecting seed or getting seed from our local distributors and germinating those. And in a few years, you can have these amazing prairie plots right on your garden or sunroof.
So what have been some of the most successful strategies for both habitat and species restoration? Forest was doing some really interesting tarping trials at Finn River, right? And Finn River just last year became really interested in doing a prairie plot.
It's cool, because it's like, where can't you put a prairie in if you've got some open sunny spots, which we have here in great abundance, and so around your own yards. And kind of one of the biggest challenges is just dealing with, what do you do with all these introduced sod-forming grasses that are forming this highly competitive sheet or matrix of lawn grasses that are really challenging to deal with? And the best thing is just suppression. This time of the year is actually a really good time. This time over the next few months, just get out a big, heavy black tarp, cut the grasses down to as tightly as you can, just give them a good cutting, and then spread your tarp out over it. And essentially, you steam cook all of the grasses and seeds that are across the summer months. Once it starts getting heat to that tarp, it heats up in there and everything starts to germinate early. You get those kind of really, white, sclerotted looking shoots try to come up, but under that black tarp, they just cook. And it's amazing what just one summer can do for cooking and sterilizing all of these seeds.
It's just so much easier. I mean, people are really intimidated when they say, I've got to pull all of these plants out, pull all of these exotic grasses out, and, rototill. Much effort, and all you have to do is cover it with a heavy tarp.
That's right. And you can go out now, and when you visit Finn River, I recommend some of the cranberry oak fine elixirs. Go for a little stroll, and right there, just off of the end of the picnic tables, you'll see in the prairie circle, it's a circle of young fruit trees, and in the middle of that you can see where this prairie ecosystem is going back in. It's just easy. The forest really spearheaded that, and we thank all of the support there from Finn River themselves. And this is just one of many prairies that are going in now. The Chimicum Elementary School has got a prairie going in at their community gardens there. They're actually several seasons now blooming. If you would like to visit that, contact Valerie Randall there at the school. Of course, Kaitai Prairies had lots of many hours of volunteer work out there working on that ecosystem.
With the Washington Native Plant Society, Dixie Llewellyn has been really instrumental in spearheading the effort to conserve that area. but also the Cool Cajon.
Oh, yeah,
Native
yeah, yeah.
Plant Garden.
Now, there's a place. Then there's the one that's truly out in front, though, all the work that's been done there at H.J. Carroll Park. And there's an incredible collection there of prairie species.
And a lot of different habitat types around this area.
Yeah, subalpine and wetland species and forest and edge and meadow and prairie ecosystem there. And you can see some, it's great. It's like, you know, that has been one of the most critical things that has been identified is like very few areas do you actually see prairies spreading in the wild. And now it's like, as you can just see what you can do with an old gravel pit, right? And there's beautiful gardens there now. So yeah, put that on your, when you're doing the tour for local prairies in the spring, put the H.J. Carroll Park on. It's fantastic.
And they also need a lot of volunteer effort to keep that area maintained and going.
Yeah, please do get in touch. There's nothing like a beautiful spring day out tending these plants, as people have done here for many, many thousands of years.
So we've talked about conservations on a large scale, but you're a big advocate of backyard or even small container prairies, right? Actually, Nora, our sound engineer and editor, Fred was out helping her get a little prairie started just last year, right?
Yep, she's riding the prairie wave and has a great little diversity of habitats at her place, sunny spot up there on the ridge. And probably that area probably formerly was open savanna. We know from some of these legacy trees that are hundreds of years old with open spreading crowns that now they're in forested habitat, but we know there was a lot more of this ecosystem around.
Well, before we talk about the seeds, though, I mean, how should people go about trying to convert their garden, their yard, into prairie or savanna?
Find a sunny spot where it can be maintained in perpetuity. It doesn't hurt to travel around and try to look for if you got an area of good soils, that's always good. A lot of these.
So you don't have to start with a certain soil type.
No, you can start with anything. Yep, you can start these. Remember these prairies, a lot of them, the reason they were able to establish is after the glaciers receded, 11,000, 12,000 years ago, they're just these stony soils. But conditions immediately warmed up and became drier than they are now, and that allowed prairie species to move in. You can see them in the pollen microfossil samples that are taken from lake beds that give us insight into plast plant communities. We know that gary oak and camas and these cactus move into this area right on the heels of the last ice age. The conditions warmed and moderated, and so they are growing on these, basically sterilized cobbly soils, but those work too. The prairie at the Chimicum Elementary is a good example of something that had been, the construction had scraped off all the topsoil, but we have a thriving prairie there now, working with the students there. And Chimicum Prairie, the one at Finn River, those are beautiful soils. And the Finn River orchards and cidery, they are sitting right on the mapped prairie sites that the General Land Office surveyors in the middle of the last century, in the late 1800s, mapped. And the soils there are also true prairie soils. And so there's going to be a scrumptious prairie there in a few years. So whatever you got. We do a lot of work that I do with my work with my sister Rosie in Port Angeles. We're up in the foothills on her back porch, and that's become like a prairie factory ship up there, just growing and germinating these prairie seeds. And we just hand them out to whoever's interested. Please avail yourself to them and find out a place where they can be reintroduced to the wild.
And where else can you find bulbs and seeds? Inside Passage Seeds
is a great...
Forest Shomers.
There's Northwest Meadowscapes is here. Just go online and just Native Seeds, Northeast Olympic Peninsula, Port Townsend. You can see there's several people who work in those. And of course, Pacific Rim Institute over in Coopville, they have fantastic... They've even donated plant material to some of our restoration projects, or you can purchase seeds from them. And so... Yeah, I just like, again, stress the importance of trying to get your hands on locally adapted seed stock, just because you're perpetuating local genes and organisms that have been here since time immemorial.
And with camas, is it better to start with the bulbs or from seed? I mean, are both equally successful?
If you can get your hands on bulbs, you're off to the races, because you may have a flowering plant season.
You can separate the bulbs the way...
The bulbs don't really... Occasionally you get offshoots, a little bulbs flaking off, but they really are a seed producer. They have They have these black, beautiful, small, black, shiny seeds, and the plants are prolific producers of them. Typically, the seed tends to have really high viability. You can keep the seed for years, and it maintains its viability. And it's a more enduring, but I would say a deeper, more meaningful journey if you grow these plants from the seed, because you really get to know all the little habits. I mean, we were looking at some of the bulbs that we've had now growing for 2 years over at Rosie's place, and it's like they actually migrate into the soil. The camas has these contractile roots that they send out, and then when those roots dry up, it actually pulls the plant out into the soil, and we could actually see these little where'd the camas bulbs go? And they're like little voles that had burrowed down into the. They're almost like small mammals. These camas plants. It's really cool, and we use a lot in order to get around the problem with exotic weeds that are in all soils now. It's like we would just buy regular commercial potting soils, good organic potting soils, and just we do all our growing in those and mixing them in with sand, making a little bit more loamy. It's just amazing how, I mean, all these plants that you sort of view in the wild as kind of being these kind of small, windswept bonsai, but you bring them into human care and they go crazy. It's like these nodding onions will be like 3 feet high and these camases. Oh, so it's great. Like super rewarding to interact with them on a personal level.
Yeah. So hopefully Fred will have inspired some of you listeners with a bit of extra space and sun to start a prairie of your own. And if you'd like to learn more about oak savannas and prairie restoration in our area, please go to olympicpeninsulaprairies.org, cascadiaprairieoak.org, or the Washington Native Plant Society at wnps.org. Thanks so much once again to Fred Sharp for being our guide to our lovely prairie and oak savanna habitats, to Nora Petrich for being our sound editor, and to all of you for listening. As always, wishing you happy trails.
Bye all. It's been a pleasure. See you on the meadows.